not employees' work performance, but how does it affect their own walk with God and their own interest in doing what's right? How does your leadership as a father, how does your leadership in your home, how is it affected by your manner and your demeanor and your outlook in life and your expressions? Does God really care about these things? How important is a joyful expression? How does God actually feel about a sour attitude? How does he actually feel? Do you think he cares about it? What if my sour attitude causes someone to fail in their Christian life and say, who really cares? I'm going to do what I want to do. What does God think? If you compare a joyful expression with a sour attitude, which do you think complements a Christian testimony? We know, don't we? We know. And then, of course, I thought about Mother's Day the last weeks, and you know, as mothers, your expression in the home, your expression in your relation to, as you relate to your children, your family, it just says so much, doesn't it? And we'll talk about that a little as we go along. And so the message this morning isn't necessarily just a Mother's Day message. There are some other subjects that I thought about preaching on. I had a man tell me this week that we were talking about salvation, and we get on subjects, religious, scriptural subjects, different times. And he told me this week, that we're talking about eternal security and once saved, always saved. And he told me that, to my surprise, he said, I sort of lean a little bit toward that camp. And we went on with some business things, but that hasn't left my mind. And so there were other subjects. I thought about, since our all-day meeting last week and the emphasis on the home and all the rich teaching we received, that maybe we could do without a Mother's Day message. But the Lord led me in these thoughts. And so the message this morning is for everyone. It's for all of us. And as mothers, if you can receive some encouragement in your own lives, I'll refer to your roles a few different times. But the message is for all of us to think about God's attitude toward how God feels about our own personal expression. Here in Nehemiah chapter 8, we have in verse 10, we have this familiar phrase at the end of verse 10, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. For the joy of the Lord is your strength. And that's the text. Verse 10 is the text. Verse, the title of the message is The Christian's Expression of Joy. Now here in Nehemiah, there was a large group that returned to Jerusalem from captivity and exile in Babylon, and they desired to serve God faithfully. They really did. They wanted to hear the law read. And there were those assigned. There was a large group of people, over 42,000. And they were gathered together. They came and they said, told Nehemiah and the scribes and the Levites, that we want to hear the law. And so there were those assigned to explain what was read and to give the sense. And I picture that this large group stood before the wooden pulpit that they made, and the law was read, and there were those scattered throughout the group that would help small groups, would answer questions, and someone would raise their hand and say, I don't understand what he said there, and they would help to interpret, to give the sense, to explain it. In verse 9 it says that all the people wept. And there were various emotions that pressed upon them. One is just the wonder of being back in their homeland. Here they were. They had been captives. They were exiled from home. And they had returned. God had blessed their return. He had blessed them tremendously. And just the wonder of all that was an emotion that pressed upon them. The wonder of being back in their homeland. The 42,000 men, women, and teenagers. It says that all those that were gathered that could understand. And so it was this group of adults and teenagers hearing the law of God read. And godly men that cared enough to help them understand. These people hadn't heard the law of God for years and years and years. And some of them, probably most of them, never heard the law read. And then also the realization of how far they had strayed from God. And these emotions pressed in upon them and upon their minds. And in verse 10, we have this verse then. Then he said unto them, Nehemiah said unto them, go your way, eat the fat and drink the sweet, and send portions unto them for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy unto our Lord. Neither be ye sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. And in essence, Nehemiah was saying, let's not allow the emotions of the moment to cloud the reality of God's mercy and goodness to us. Let's rejoice and express our thanks to God by blessing others. Maybe it was the poor and the fatherless and those that were underprivileged. He said, let's use this moment, this day, to bless the lives of others. And then he made this statement, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. This word strength, the Hebrew word means a fortified place or defense. And so he's not saying, or maybe I should say it this way, that sometimes when I think of this verse, I think of it as, you know, as long as I can be joyful in the Lord, then it's a strength to help and encourage me all through life. And it sort of carries me on. This word strength has this picture of a fortified place, a defense. And it's a picture, I believe, that life is not always kind to our feelings or our wishes. You know, we wish for things to go smooth. We wish for things to go as planned. But life is not always kind to our feelings or wishes. And in the midst of hardship, and in the midst of heartache, and in the moment of temptation, there is a place where hearts can abide and be secure from sin, from despair, and from losing hope. A fortified place. And we have the choice to abide there, in that place of God, and to allow our hearts to be there. The joy of the Lord is your strength. And so this morning, how does God feel about your joy? Is it really important to express joy? I like to look at a number of scriptures, and I'm only going to turn to one of these, and you can turn to Lamentations chapter 3 a while if you care to. But I have quite a few references, and I'm going to read these verses. And I want us to think about this question, that does God care about our joy? Does he care about the expression of your heart? In Psalm chapter 5 and verse 11, we have this verse, but let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. And so we see in this verse very clearly that Christian joy is rooted and grounded in the work that Christ has done in our hearts and lives. And our relationship with him and our appreciation for what he has done. This word defendest, let them ever shout for joy because thou defendest them that trust in thee, is what he's saying. This word defendus means to cover over or protect them. And so it's that strength, it's that protection. Psalm 16:11, thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand are pleasures forevermore. Psalm 30 and verse 5. The last part of the verse, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. Joy cometh in the morning. And this word joy means singing. And there's a number of times in the Old Testament especially where the word joy, the Hebrew word, is singing. And this verse, I believe, tells us that you know, weeping is part of life. We know that. There's sadness. There are overwhelming moments. There are cares. There are deep concerns we have for others. And weeping is the way God created us to express and to deal with emotions. But he's telling us here that weeping is a part of life, but joy comes in the morning. There's an end to that. There is, maybe the care doesn't go away, but the overwhelming emotion, we can go on with life. We don't need to stay at that place. There is sunshine and a new day that affords a song even in sadness and disappointment. And God sends the dawn of a new day. Going to Lamentations chapter 3, I like to read verses 18 through 27. He says in verse 18, and I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord. Remembering mine affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall, my soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me. Then I recall to my mind, therefore have I hope. He's saying here in verse 20 that my soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me. My sender reference says it's bowed down in me. He's saying that these pressures are upon me as I remember the afflictions and the misery. And then verse 21, he switches and he says, this I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. And the writer here is saying that it's a choice I have. It's a decision I made. I decide to recall, to bring these things to mind. Of the Lord's mercies, they're new every morning. His faithfulness is great and vast. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him. To the soul that seeketh him, it is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. Verse 27, it is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. And so as young people today, establish these as patterns of your life and habits of your life. To choose to allow the mercies of God and the goodness of God to be a light and direct your life. Psalm 126, verse 5, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy or singing. Proverbs 15:23, a man hath joy by the answer of his mouth and a word spoken in due season. How good is it? It's just our words and the attitude behind our words has so much power. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 26, for God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up that he may give to him that is good before God. And so God giveth to men that are good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. Isaiah 29, verse 19, "The meek also shall increase their joy in the Lord, and the poor among men shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel." John 15 and verse 11, "These things have I spoken unto you," Jesus said, "that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full." 2 Corinthians 1, verse 24, "Not for that we have dominion over your faith, but are helpers of your joy, for by faith ye stand." And so, as believers and as brotherhood and as Christian friends and as ministers of the gospel, we want to be fellow helpers of joy, of your joy. For by faith ye stand. It's through faith that you can have this joy in your hearts. Proverbs 5 and verse 18, "Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth." God wants us to be happy with his blessings and to enjoy the blessings that he gives. Proverbs 29 verse 2, "When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn." And so, authority, your leadership as a dad in your home should bring joy to your family. Not fear, but joy. Proverbs 15 and verse 13, "A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance." Romans 12 and verse 8, "Or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. He that ruleth with diligence, and he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness." And then Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice." And so, is God interested in our expressions of life? I'd like to look next at some heart conditions that allow for Christian joy. I believe I have four of them, and then I would like to simply look at expressions of Christian joy and have four simple points there as well. Heart conditions that allow for Christian joy. Number one is a personal desire to know God. There in Nehemiah, God's people desired to know him. God's people desired to know the law of God. It was their desire to worship him and to serve him and to be faithful to him. They wanted to serve him in sincerity and truth. They loved God. They loved his word. They loved his law. And they desired that with all their heart. And we today delight in him and his word. We desire godliness and the things of God. Philippians 3 and verse 10, Paul says there, "That I may know him, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death." That I may know him. A personal desire to know God. In 1 John chapter 5 and verse 20, we have this verse, "And we know that the Son of God is come and hath given us an understanding that we may know him that is true. And we are in him that is true, even in his Son, Jesus Christ. This is the true God and eternal life." And so, heart conditions that allow for joy is a heart that desires to know God. If God is the source of joy, if he is the one that is our strength and our security, he's the one that defends us, let's give our all to him and seek him in our everyday life. Secondly, is an acceptance of what God allows to come in our life. Acceptance of what God allows to come in our life. You know, life is basically divided into two categories. There are things that we can't change, and there are things that we can change. There are things that we have a choice in, and there are things that we do not. And as you think back over life and consider your own life, and the fact that life is broken down into those two realms, you know, the past is in the past, isn't it? And we can't change any of it. And there are things in the past that we would We would gladly change if we could and could do it over again, but we can't. And so today is the opportunity to decide how we relate and respond to all of yesterday and all of the past. We have the opportunity today to decide how we will relate to all of the past. And today there are things that happened or will happen to you, and tomorrow and the next day, that you can't change. You didn't have control over. God allows tough things to come. Sometimes we feel trapped by yesterday's experience and forget that today, and all of yesterday, but today, God sees and He cares, and He longs for us to ask Him for His marvelous grace. He wants to provide for us for today and tomorrow and not be trapped by yesterday's experiences. You know, we must also live in reality. Part of accepting what God allows in life is to live in the reality of where we are and what has happened. And we don't try to run away from that. You know, death is one of those things that is difficult. It's hard to accept, it's hard to deal with, it's hard to watch happen. But we don't run away from it. We have funeral services that we preach the Word of God, and we spend time with those that are grieving. And we comfort. We don't try to run away from that reality. I remember years ago being at a farm one day in about 3 hours west of here. And we were looking at doing a project there in the farm. Some building was going on. And the customer talked about the excavators. And he said, well, he doesn't think they're going to show up today and maybe not tomorrow. There had been a sudden accident. Someone was killed in a car accident. It was happened to be one of their buddies. And he said, I'm not going to call them because he said they're just drinking it off. Now, I never forgot that. But accepting what God allows in our life, of course, is only done as we are in a right relationship with Him. But we don't try to run away or drown out the reality of the negative things and the bad things that God allows. Whether it's what God allows that's beyond our control or our own failures. And so it's our own choice. It's my choice as to how I respond. In acceptance lieth peace. There's a poem written by Amy Carmichael. And I believe that phrase, in acceptance lieth peace, is credited to her. But she wrote a poem, In Acceptance Lieth Peace, was the title. And listen carefully to the thought in these words. He said, I will forget the dying faces, the empty places, they shall be filled again. O voices moaning deep within me, cease. But the vain word, vain, vain, not in forgetting lieth peace. He said, I will crowd out action upon action. The strife of faction shall stir me and sustain. O tears that drown the fire of manhood, cease. But vain the word, vain, vain, not in endeavor lieth peace. He said, I will withdraw me and be quiet. Why meddle in life's riot? Shut be my door to pain. Desire, thou dost befool me, thou shalt cease. But vain the word, vain, vain, not in aloofness lieth peace. He said, I will submit, I am defeated. God hath depleted my life of its rich gain. O futile murmurings, why will ye not cease? But vain the word, vain, vain, not in submission lieth peace. He said, I will accept the breaking sorrow which God tomorrow will to his son explain. Then did the turmoil deep within me cease. Not vain the word, not vain, for in acceptance lieth peace. May we learn that in our lives. Thirdly is humility. Isaiah 29 and verse 19 said there that the meek also shall increase their joy. Humility allows for us to rejoice in others' success and not feel competition or jealousy toward them. You know, pride is a destroyer of joy. Pride ruins joy. Pride basks in hilarious laughter, especially when the attention is turned toward itself. But that's not joy. Pride ruins joy. And so as we learn to be humble about our own selves, it allows for joy and deep, settled peace to abide in our hearts. And fourthly, another heart attitude and heart condition is to willingly serve. And here in Romans 12 and verse 8, read that verse. He said here, he that ruleth, do it with diligence. And that word diligence means, one of the meanings is carefulness. And so as fathers, as mothers, as in whatever role of leadership we are, mothers, you don't necessarily see yourself as a leader, but you know, when dad's not around, you guide and direct the house. And you oversee the children, and you do it under his direction and his leadership, but you lead out. And he says here that what, as he that ruleth, to do it with diligence or carefulness. He that showeth mercy, which is meeting the needs of others, reaching out, serving. He says we're to do it with cheerfulness. How about if we try to wash feet during the week without cheerfulness? How does it work? And we know that our attitude makes so much difference. Our willingness to serve without recognition, our willingness to serve others without, well, it always requires us to put others first. Making the sacrifice, it relates to all areas of life, fathers, mothers, youth, willingly serving. Willingness supersedes feelings. And willingness is always evident, or the lack thereof, in our expression, always. If someone does something for you, you can always tell, can't you, whether they're doing it willingly or not. Always. Every time. And the same is true for ourselves. Well, let's look yet at expressions of Christian joy. Is God interested in our expression? Does God care about the expressions that we give, the expressions of Christian joy? Number one is that we are salt and we are light. Salt brings out flavor. Our testimony is either hindered or confirmed by our mannerism and by our expression. Whether we're doing it out of duty or whether we're doing it because we love to be involved in God's work and love to serve others. We are salt and light. Whether we are glad to be a Christian or whether we see it as drudgery. Whether we are glad to be separated unto God and from the world or we're sort of embarrassed by it. It all is given in our expression. Salt brings out flavor. And our testimony is either hindered or confirmed. And so sharing the gospel, singing in New York City, talking with your unsaved neighbor, relationships on the job and with fellow employees, and the list goes on and on. We are salt and light. And God wants us to, intends that we be that every day. Our lives radiate what's in our heart. What do people see in our lives? You know, in your home, as mothers, you know, when your children get up in the morning, they wake up and come down the stair steps or down the hallway toward the kitchen, and hearing Mom out in the kitchen just going about her work, singing a tune, humming a tune, singing a song, there's just a stage that is set that you can't create hardly by anything else. And that's true for all of us. What do people hear from our lives? Are we salt in life? Our lives radiate. A cheerful countenance is not something that we can paste on. Now, maybe sometimes we feel that way, but really, from day to day, a cheerful countenance needs to be from the inside out. Now, there are times, there are days when things don't go so well, and we don't feel the best, and not everybody needs to know about those things. And so, maybe it's all right sometimes to paste on a smile to your children, or paste on a smile, if you understand what I mean, to those that we work with and we share with. But finally, we are salt and light, and it needs to come from a heart that's at rest with God. Secondly, we untiringly labor for those we love. I'd like to give just a little illustration of this. So every year there's an annual men's sing, I believe in December it is. And I used to, when that started, I don't remember which year it started, but for a number of years I had sung in that with the men's sing. And remember a time, I believe it was at Jonestown School, when I was just listening in the audience. And it's Saturday evening. Just if you were never at men's sing, if you never helped, if you never observed, just think about it a little bit. There's men that come together from several hours away. They come together, I guess it was Friday evening and Saturday. And they come as families. They bring their wives and their children. And you mothers know how it is to pack up for a family. It's fun, but it's not fun. You know, it's a lot of work, isn't it? And you picture these families coming into Lebanon County and staying with friends. And that evening I was sitting there and I was watching the people coming in that side hallway. I was sitting behind the hallway from the school. And I was watching these mothers come in with their children. So Mom comes in with five children, young preschoolers. And I just knew enough about life to know that most of them were just dead tired. They had to be. It was a big weekend. It was Saturday evening. And children don't always do the best on Saturday evening. They get tired and they get weary. But it was men's sing, and Dad was wound up, but he was excited. And he was pumped up, and the singing was just what he lived for, some of them. And I watched those mothers, and I said to myself, you know, those mothers love their husbands. They, more than anything else, they love to have a godly husband. And singing and men sing is something that means a lot to him. And they did it because they love him. And they love the gospel and they love the word and love good singing. But we untiringly labor for those that we love. And mothers know this and illustrate this to the world around. There's long nights, sick children, making a meal for someone else, and the list goes on and on, on and on. And all this without complaining. All this without complaining. You know, maybe in God's eyes, when we complain, when I complain about something I need to do, I wonder in God's eyes, it sort of cancels out all the brownie points that we might think we collected. It does. It just, God hears those things. And as mothers today, I believe that complaining, there's a difference. There's a difference between complaining and telling your husband how weary you are when he comes home from work. He understands. We need to understand. We need to care and do what we can to alleviate your load and to help with it. But it's not the same thing. We can believe that God expects us to serve without complaining. Thirdly, we know how important are words of affirmation to others. You know, we are all human enough and we're all selfish enough to know what it feels like to receive words of affirmation. And we sort of desire that. But I believe that the Christian's expression of joy is one where we see it as important to give words of affirmation to others. In Proverbs 31 and verse 26, it says there about the virtuous woman that she openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. Let's remember to give words of affirmation. Number four, every day is a new opportunity. Be a light and bless someone else. Do better than yesterday. Thank God and meditate on His goodness. Rather than reveling in the disappointments and the failures of yesterday, let's see each day as an opportunity to allow God to pour His grace into our life. Youth have a powerful opportunity to bless others. The world expects youth to be self-centered and uncaring. But be a light and reach out to those around us. In closing, I'd like to just share this quote from Adam Clark in relation to Nehemiah chapter 8 and verse 10. And this phrase, "For the joy of the Lord is your strength," he says this: "This is no gluttonous and drunken festival that enervates the body and enfeebles the mind. From your religious feast," which is your personal meditation on God or the Word, "from your religious feast, your bodies will acquire strength and your mind's power and fervor, so that you shall be able to do His will and to do it cheerfully. Religious joy, properly tempered with continual dependence on the help of God, meekness of mind, and self-diffidence, is a powerful means of strengthening the soul. In such a state, every duty is practicable and every duty delightful. In such a frame of mind, no man can ever fall. And in such a state of mind, the general health of the body is much improved. A cheerful heart is not only a continual feast, but also a continual medicine." May God help each one of us to be the expression of His work in our hearts and lives that will draw others to Him, and that we can be a faithful testimony. May God bless each of you, and a special blessing on each of you mothers today. Let's kneel for prayer.